The information in this video or podcast is not intended nor implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All content, including text, graphics, images, and information contained in this video or podcast, is for general information purposes only and does not replace your professors or a consultation from your own doctor or healthcare professional. All right, well, welcome back to another episode.
Yes, welcome. I hope you guys enjoyed the first two episodes in our little intro. Again, please let us know what you guys thought. We're just trying to make this the best as possible for everybody. So,
and as we're trying to still figure some things out here and there, we're definitely learning quite a bit. But
let's go ahead and get into that introduction. Hey guys, we're just popping in here real quick because we wanted to let you know we are mixing up the format a little bit.
Yeah, so we're trying something new. We got a little bit of feedback, which we kind of felt the same way, and it was the same thing. We're kind of experimenting, but just real quick, we're going to be switching to aiming 2 episodes per week and switching to a 30-ish minute podcast episode. A little bit quicker. Yeah, a little bit more digestible, I guess.
Easier to listen on the go in between breaks and things like that. So we're going to be switching to kind of closer to that 30 minute mark. We're going to be uploading on Tuesdays as of right now and Fridays.
That's going to be the goal, and we'll go from there.
And then we also are uploading Wednesday on YouTube with our quick little refreshers on the pathos. So check those little videos out.
The PTA podcast with your hosts Ken
and Laura. Thanks again for joining for another exciting episode.
All right, so let's start with what today's topics are going to be. We're going to be talking about our favorite things to treat, whether it be a body part or a certain kind of patient population. We're going to get into our patho for today as well, and then kind of just go from there.
See if you guys got it right.
Yes, did you guys look at the hints?
Yeah, how many of you guys are getting right? Are they too easy, too hard? Are you checking it out on our Instagram and Twitter? You know.
I think our last hint is kind of a gimme. At that point, if you don't know it.
The Twitter one is definitely.
Yeah, the Twitter ones are kind of like.
You can figure it. It's in there. It's literally in there.
The word is in there somewhere. We're going to play with around with those a little bit, I believe. Yeah. But we'll see what we do later on.
Hopefully it's fun and just engaging. And you guys get to have a little bit of a break, I guess, from your normal day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, but, just kind of switch things up.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and get into what our favorite things to treat are. If you have a favorite, if you even have a least favorite, go ahead and let us know. Let us know in the comments too, guys. What's your guys' favorite?
Yeah, what do you guys like to treat and why? Mm-hmm. Is there a certain reason? Is it just because it's easier? Just because it's interesting? It can definitely go a lot of different ways for that.
Yeah, let us know. But Ken, what's your favorite to treat?
I was going back and forth a little bit. But I think my favorite's going to be balance patients. One, because it definitely saves my hands, but they're also just very interesting. It can do anything from vestibular to muscular to just things just not churning correctly. And I got a lot of exposure for that when I was doing my rotation at physical, just because it was a balance-oriented location. Mm-hmm. So now that I'm in an ortho clinic, I don't see it as much. But I do mainly take most of the balance patients that I can.
Does that kind of feel good sometimes when you're like, ooh, balance comes in? Mine.
Oh, it's interesting. Mine. Oh, let's see what we can do.
Kenny's like, I actually ordered a lot of stuff like,
just because.
do I get that one?
I should get cones and spike pods. I was like, these are all the things that I use.
Can I touch that?
I'll take it.
Can I touch that chart?
But as far as like just the exercises are just so much fun just because you just can different. Do like the weight shifting to the reaching to changing the surface to eyes open to eyes closed. There's just so much variety to address the issue and just different approaches that makes it very interesting and keeps it engaging each visit. Because with my
patients, it's just different too.
It is different.
It's just
with my patients that I have now. Every single visit, I do something different.
Yeah,
I'm like thinking, like, okay, let's do this, that, and this, and let's see how those go. And depending if it's too easy that day, then I'll bump it up. If it's too hard, then I'll adjust for the next exercise.
Well, and that's the thing too that's kind of nice about like balance patients is you never know what you're going to get coming in. So like you have to be kind of on your toes a little bit more, which is nice.
That's
they could
true.
Be having like a good day or they could be having a bad day. And if they're having a bad day, the thing that was like super simple last visit is
could
now like
a lot more difficult
ridiculously hard mm-hmm. or they're unable to even go.
So you definitely have to address or just keep in mind each visit. Mm-hmm. Be like, okay, how are we doing today?
It's a little bit closer work too.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to spend, at least at the clinic that we kind of were at, usually with a balance patient, you spent more one-on-one time with them.
Yeah, so definitely nice. Slows things down for you and just lets you just focus on one patient for a little more time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just fun to be talking to them. Like even talking to them actually is a distraction. So if they're doing a single leg stance and they're like laser focused, then I'll start talking to them about like, oh, how's your remodeling going at your house? So now that dual focusing, sometimes they lose their balance because they can't focus on balance and have a conversation at the same time.
Yeah.
So even things like that, like it's just normal stuff for us. It's actually quite difficult for patients who are fall risks and who have balance deficits.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely things that you can keep in mind.
Yeah, I would say for me, like I love total knees. Total knees by far are my favorite. I don't know why.
Yeah, they're easy. Any reason in particular?
Well, they're easy, but that's not why I love them. I love the fact that I don't know. I've just always enjoyed it. You know, you get to kind of push the limits a little bit because you can't really like screw it up. It takes a lot for you to
I feel like I struggle with that a little bit.
And then I think the
you're not as worried about.
Yeah, you're not as worried, which is part of it. It's just because of the fact that you can just go in there and you can just go.
Yeah, to go their tolerance and things.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You have to look. And I feel like that's also why I like it is I was really good at gauging patients to push them to the limits, but not push them to the point where they're like, I'm never coming back here because you hurt me so bad.
I don't
want to
work with you anymore.
Yeah. So, like, they know they would get benefits out of it, like, discussing it with the patients. And I think the fun thing with that, too, is just seeing the progression.
Oh, definitely.
I really loved to get them from post-op, like, 2 days, 3 days post-op to the point where I loved working with them till they walk out. And I don't know.
And
so far, majority of my total knee patients have always been, like, because they're kind of, like, that older but younger population in a way. Like, I don't know, the conversations are really fun, too. So,
have you ever worked with someone who had bilateral knee replacements?
Yes.
At the same time?
Yes.
Did the patient, how did that go? For you or for the patient?
For the patient.
They didn't like it?
They were in a lot of pain. So
from what I hear, it's just because a total knee replacement is...
So theirs wasn't full total on both.
It wasn't okay.
So it was a partial on one knee and then a full on the other.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hear like as soon as, so someone, when you do need a knee replacement, sometimes you'll need both.
Mm-hmm.
And after a patient goes through one, they won't get the other done.
Yeah.
So that's why they do both at the same time. But I've seen some patients who are, because I've heard of it, but I've never worked with someone who's had bilateral knee replacements.
It was early on in my career.
Okay.
I want to say it was actually during my clinical rotations.
I think some docs won't do it.
No.
Because I have a patient looking for it. Be like, oh, I want to do both at the same time.
I don't recommend it, actually.
Really? Because there are some people who do. They're like, just get it over with. Like, you're miserable for a while, but then you're good. Like, you don't have to go through the whole process all over again.
The hard part with it too, though, is like because of the fact that both are in such bad pain, you're kind of like doubling up on the pain in a way. Like it hurts a lot, and so you're compensating. And so sometimes they won't even do anything because just both knees hurt.
Just
like everything hurts. So why get up at all? So you have to battle that. And then on top of it too, I think because of the fact that you can't overcompensate on one side for a little bit, it causes so much back pain. I had a patient with so much more back pain because of the fact that their lower back was taking on the brunt of their
walking. Just everything, yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, everything kind of just got off. I don't know. I really feel like that's just so dependent on, like,
Depends on the patient. Yeah.
And the care and the help and the motivation.
Because I think some people could benefit from it and other people can't.
Yeah.
A lot of it just depends on the patient. I think letting them know up front, like, hey, like, it's going to really suck for a while because both your knees are now going through a lot of rehab at the same time.
But if they're, like, super motivated, like, and maybe on the younger side I could see it, but definitely, like, on the older side of it, like, I wouldn't recommend.
Yeah.
And I know it would just be tough, difficult.
But some patients are like, I just want to just get it done, be over with one time.
But now my question is, so they'll say like a lot of patients will get a total knee and then sometimes they won't go back because, well, first of all, we should probably mention that total replacements is our topic for today.
Oh, yeah.
So it kind of worked out that.
Our today's patho is total replacements, whether it be shoulder, hip, or knee.
We're going to kind of cover a little bit of all. We'll probably focus a little bit more on the knee and the hip just because of the fact that for us, that's more what we saw.
Yeah, it's definitely more common
I had about like three shoulder replacements while working in like 4 years.
Well, I was a technician and I think I saw one.
Yeah.
And that was for several years.
Yeah. So
but
I'm
now
like
being a therapist, I've seen maybe 7, 8.
Wow.
I've seen quite a few.
I swear shoulders. It goes in waves.
It is a wave.
It's a wave. But going back to the total knee real quick, what I was saying is the fact that it makes me wonder sometimes that if you had your first one and you thought that was so hard to go through, is your pain really that bad that you need a second one if you're not willing to go back through it?
That's what you ask yourself.
That's what you ask yourself.
Is the pain kind of like better than what you know is coming for the other side?
Yeah. So it's interesting. There's a lot of people who, like, I've also had that personally. I've had, I would say over 75% of mine who had one and then needed the second, they were like, oh, heck yeah, I'm doing this again.
Yeah, because it's so much better afterwards.
Yeah. And a lot of times, too, if they need both replaced or, you know, one's worse than the other now, the recovery for the surgical side will actually be held up due to the non-surgical side. Because the non-surgical side is still having a lot of pain and limitation because of the pain. Because they need to go back and get total knee. And so I've had a patient who had her one. We kind of went as far as we could because of the fact that she was limited by her other knee. And went in, she had her second one done, came back, and then we, you know, got kind of them up to equal par. And then we were able to push them both even farther. But we wouldn't have been able to get her other knee, her original knee there because of the fact that she was limited by what her non-surgical knee at the time. Yeah.
Because I've seen also with just like an arthroscopy.
Mm-hmm.
Like they'll have it on one knee and then both knees need it. One knee is doing great. The surgical side is doing great.
Mm-hmm.
But now we can't progress the surgical side because the non-surgical side is still affected.
Exactly.
That side is so limited. So it's like we can't do anything weight bearing because they can't stand on it.
Yeah. Or so they can't tolerate standing for too long.
Yeah. So everything was just open chain, focusing on the surgical side until the non-surgical side got addressed.
Yeah.
But it definitely does make treatment more difficult because it's like, okay, I got to keep in mind that I can only do these things. Now, how many different ways can I do that one thing?
Well, and the thing that's kind of fascinating too is like that is a great experience of where like book differs so much compared to clinical in a way. Because the book tells you, oh yeah, you'll be no problem. But then when you come to real life, the odds of you getting a patient who just needs like one side done or just that done or nothing else going on, like, are so rare. Definitely when the population who are getting total knees, they're usually both kind of jacked up in some way.
Keep in mind a lot of comorbidities.
Exactly. And so like that's a great thing where it's like, well, the book says I should be able to get here. Well, you can, but you're being held back by
some other things.
A different source.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the book is like best case scenario. It's like, oh, here we have a total knee replacement, but this is the only thing we're addressing.
Mm-hmm.
But now they have some sort of hip weakness or back pain, so now they're still compensating for certain things. So it makes the gait difficult. It makes
just weight bearing difficult. And when you think about it too, with people who are going through total replacements, and this goes for shoulder, hip, knee, they usually are going for so long because a lot of times doctors won't do it till you hit a certain age because they only last for X amount of years. Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to go through the revisions and...
Yeah, so they don't want to do it too soon because of the fact that the by the time of your lifetime, you might be at that age where you need a new one, but you might be too old, unfortunately, to get a new one because they will say you're too old for it.
Yeah, it's just not so worth going under the
they
knife
try to again. Push you. Yeah, they try to push you as far out in a way as possible till they do these replacements.
I mean, I've met younger patients that has had both knees replaced, both hips replaced, and a shoulder replaced.
How young?
Like 40s, 50s.
Yeah, that surprises me.
And it's just, and see, this is another thing too that we talked about. I talk a lot about with my patients because some are like, oh, maybe if I was like active when I was younger or if I did exercise. I was like, honestly, we also see patients who went too far in that direction and they're here because they were so active, because they were more like, I guess, geared towards athletics. Mm-hmm. And now they're suffering all these injuries because they put their bodies through so much.
Yeah.
So now it's like, well, it is just like a balance. So yes, be active, be healthy.
I think when it comes to joints wearing down, I think a lot of it honestly just comes down to our bodies in general.
Yeah, everybody's different.
Everybody's different. Everybody breaks down differently. Yeah, there's certain parts where you could do more wear and tear, but I do think it does. I think it comes down to a lot of genetics too. Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that you could have someone who is overworking their body and they have no issues on their joints whatsoever, where you have another person who's overworking their body and they have so many joint issues, or you have someone who's just doing just enough to stay healthy and everything like that, no issue, and then you have another one that has issues, and then you have people who are doing nothing and they're completely fine, and other people who are like, there's so many different outcomes. So like, I don't think, looking back, you can't say yes maybe or if I no, just did this, or maybe or, yeah. There's just so much, so you can't you can't say, well, yeah, you're right. If you were younger, if you decided to run a day each day, like 20 minutes each day, yeah, you would definitely not have a total knee replacement. That's not the case. No. Like, you don't know that.
A lot of patients think that.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, yeah, I should have done this, I should have done that. And I'm like, no, like, it's like, we're going to address you. You're here for this. Like, this is what we're going to do. And I mean, if someone wants, if they do want to be more active, go for it. Like, go be more active, walk a little bit more and see if that helps you. But I'm not going to say, like, this is the reason why you're here.
Yeah, exactly. You can't. There's just too many factors. Mm-hmm. There's way too many factors. And like, again, I use myself as an example all the time because I can relate. So when like patients would bring that up, I'm like, I'm a great example. I was like, I used to be a competitive swimmer. I started swimming when I was 5 and a half and swam all the way through college on a scholarship. And was doing club year round. So like I was swimming, doing weight training, da, da, da. I started having joint issues when I was 9 years old.
Yeah, that's brutal.
And I wasn't even intense swimming at that point. Like I was swimming, but I wasn't quite elite status quite yet. I was not at that point, but I started having joint issues at 9. So really like, yeah, I wasn't healthy. Nothing that I was doing was crazy, but because of other issues I had going on too, it caused joint issues. And since then I've had joint issues since I was 9. I've literally been in and out of physical therapy since I was 9 years old for shoulders, knees, ankles, back.
A little bit of everything.
Literally a little bit of everything.
I feel like a lot of people in this field have gone through physical therapy themselves.
Well, that's usually how you kind of find the love of it sometimes. Yeah.
Well, let's get into a little bit more about the patho.
Yeah, go for it.
So the pathos are going to be just total replacements in general, whether it be a total knee replacements, total shoulder, total hip. You'll see these as TKA, TSA, and THA, just total hip arthroplasty, total knee arthroplasty, total shoulder arthroplasty, so on and so forth.
Clever wording.
Thank you.
But well, we want to talk about I guess it's not really you who came up with it. I was given whoever, you know.
Oh, no, that was, no, I wanted the credit.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, thank you. So I just want to talk about the each one's like kind of like its protocols, its do's and don'ts. And it's important both in the hospital and for post-op. So we saw it quite a bit because during these surgeries, therapy is warranted almost immediately after. Sometimes we would see total knees same day. We see total hips same day, or maybe the day next day.
Yeah, the day after.
Maybe they do like one day of home health or one day of inpatient care, and then they just go straight to outpatient because the docs want them up and moving.
Well, I think it all depends on the age.
Yeah, and the age too, sometimes, or just transportation. Yeah. Like, there's more factors that go into it, but if they can transport themselves, a lot of the times they'll end up in outpatient, I feel like.
Yeah.
But when it comes to these, you have your protocols, you have your precautions that you got to follow, and this is something that everybody should be aware of. And I say that because some clinics have technicians, some don't. So the therapists are all trained to know all this information, but it's also important that staff knows it as well, because no one wants to be breaking these protocols.
Yeah.
And they're more
You don't want to be the reason that, like, a patient's going back to the doctor because of the dislocation.
Oh, yes.
You do not want to be that reason.
So when it comes to total shoulders, there is some general guidelines as far as protocols, how far into abduction, avoid internal rotation, avoid external rotation for so-and-so.
And the doctor, a good doctor, will send over a protocol too.
Yeah, because it depends on how they did it or the extent of it. But there are general guidelines. Reverse
versus...
True, doing a partial versus a reverse, doing a normal, like the protocols are going to change. And you can always look them up. You can look up general guidelines, and you can always use pain as your guide. But some surgeons will also send their protocols.
Yeah.
Knees don't get them because it's just kind of too tolerance.
Yep.
And
then
can't
really mess those up too much.
For hips, there's universal precautions, and there's also specific precautions depending on the approach that they take.
Yep.
Do you want to go over those?
Well, one of the things I do want to say real quick is, just, you have to keep in mind when you're thinking about these precautions, think in mind of what the joint does. So the reason why, you know, your total shoulder and your total hip have more precautions is because of the fact that that joint does more. It's a ball and socket on both. Where the knee joint, you have less precautions because it's a hinge joint. So you really only have flexion and extension to really worry about that. So, like, keep those in mind. But for your universal precautions for your hip is, you know, no abduction.
Other way.
Abduction. Sorry. About how you can do abduction.
Yeah, you can't. AB is okay.
AB is okay. AB is great, actually.
Yes.
Adduction.
No, adduction. This is why they get, like, the adductor pillows.
Yep.
Or if, like, there's a specific pillow for it that they'll get in the hospital, too. Or outpatient, you just put a pillow between their
like
knees.
So when, for example, a lot of people forget, techs, PTs, PTAs, like, when you're having them lay sideline, there needs to be a pillow in between those legs.
Otherwise, you're breaking progression.
Yeah, you should not just, like, they should not just be turning on their side. And as a therapist, this is your job to make sure that they understand these universal precautions, too. You kind of go over it. And if the doctor, a lot of times, sometimes the doctors don't go over it too much. They'll get a packet and it'll say it in there, but they'll never discuss it with them.
We're almost like the third line, really, I think. Because once they get the surgery, I'm sure they get briefed before. They let them know after. Or they'll give them like a little packet like this, which you do's and don'ts. Also, our PT, they would always go through it when they did the eval. Like, hey, just a reminder, these are your precautions, these are your do's and don'ts. And then we're like that next wave. So by the time they get to us, I feel like they should know what their precautions are, but we just have to sure that they're not breaking them.
Well, and the thing is, too, is a lot of times patients don't realize they're doing it. So that's you true. Can say something as simple as don't bring your leg in. Well, if they lay on their side, they don't realize their leg's going in. Like, they don't realize they're adducting. And those are those ones where it's like, oh, no. You need to remind them, you know, posterior, like we talked about, posterior approach. You can't go past 90 degrees.
Like sitting in a chair, like borderline there. To them, it's just like, oh, I'm just sitting in a chair.
Tying their shoes, like posterior.
True, tying your shoes is difficult.
Is difficult. You kind of got to figure out a way to do that. You know, you don't want to do internal rotation with those surgeries.
It's another universal, internal rotation. No
internal rotation, so.
And it's not so much of an issue to just doing it kind of an open chain. It's like the way I'm thinking about it in my head. So if they just like immediately rotate their leg. But the way that they can also do it is just turn, like when they're walking. Mm-hmm. If that leg is planted and they turn
and pivot,
it can go into that internal rotation without really thinking about it.
Yeah. So it's just like little things that you just don't realize.
You can still go into those motions. Mm-hmm. However, I did hear that the study between people who know their precautions and those who don't know the precautions, there's no significant difference on whether or not they're dislocated. I mean, it's still good to know for
sure. There's definitely like new studies out there showing that the universal precautions don't need to be as strict as they used to, because of the fact that there hasn't really been proven more dislocations.
And overall, it's just a fairly successful surgery, but, from what I know.
Yeah. Overall, you don't want to be the reason.
True. You still follow them because they're still there.
Yeah. You still don't want to be the reason that you don't. And so you just got to keep that in mind.
That's why you still follow them.
So.
But these are just studies that are out there. Things that people are talking about.
And then just know, like, if you're ever worried about a dislocation, if you dislocate or something, I always loved what my PT told me. Because I was like, we were talking about it one time, and he was like, I was like, how do you really know when you dislocate? Like, if someone dislocated their hip, and he goes, oh, they will know.
He goes, that sounds painful.
You will scream bloody murder.
Yeah.
They will scream bloody murder. They will be in so much pain. Like, you will know. There's no, like, maybe I did this. I did this.
Is this only for replacements?
That's what we were talking about at that time. So
I just don't know if it's like, is it more excruciating for a total to be dislocated than just a regular joint?
I could see maybe just a total, just because of the fact that you have all that stuff still going trauma on. Yeah,
and trauma. You just re-trauma all of it.
Yeah.
That sounds painful.
A lot more scar tissue probably building up within the area too. So if you dislocate, there's a chance that you ripped the scar tissue at the same time. I don't know. I'm just thinking.
That's painful. So. Well, since total knees are your favorites, mm-hmm. you want to go over some exercises that you like to do.
Yeah.
Some manual techniques, maybe.
So.
Modalities that you, I don't know, just lay it all out there. What do you like to do with total knees and why you love them?
I love stabilization exercises.
Okay.
So as I kind of start to advance, I love doing single leg stance on a foam pad. I love doing like star taps. I love doing bird dips. A lot of those stabilization exercises, because I think they're so good.
I'm guessing this is a little further on into their program.
Yeah.
What do you like to start with?
Start with, as boring as they are, I like to do quad sets.
Quad sets?
Quad
ankle
sets.
Pumps?
Ankle.
You can.
Yeah, I do ankle pumps. Do I like to do them? No, but are they a necessary evil sometimes? Yes.
I'm just asking why you do that early on.
That's like, I'm talking like day one and two. Correct. Like, those things are gone within usually the first week, though. Hopefully.
Ankle pumps?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because they really should be up and moving within the right after that surgery.
True.
Walker, maybe for the first couple week, depending on if they've got other things going on. But I would say in a general healthy person who was using no
AD before.
Yes, thank you. I literally, I gotcha. The blank stare came in my face of like, where did the words just go? But using no AD assisted device beforehand, they should be able to get off of a walker within those first couple of days. They should be gone within the week and a half of the cane.
Yeah, but as long as they're stable. But yeah, if they're stable before, and
it shouldn't take them long.
Yeah,
it really should not. Now, the things I love doing in the beginning change with some of the stuff I love doing, of course, as they advance. One of the ones that I learned actually in my inpatient setting, we had a total knee come in, and he stayed there just because of his location. He came and stayed in the skilled nursing. He was good for an outpatient, really. He really was. So he was pretty high advanced. To get more of the extension, because he was lacking a lot. Of course, we know knee extension is one of the harder ones to get back.
And so important, too.
Mm-hmm.
For gait, proper posture.
Backwards walking.
Okay.
It was a great one to work on.
Okay, for extension or just for in general?
For working on it, really pushing it into that extension.
Okay. I like to do like a lot of overpressure or put a weight on their knee for their extension. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think of like walking backwards. And that's why like terminal knee extension is also pretty important.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there's just a lot you can do. So manual, definitely in the beginning, I do a lot of soft tissue work with overpressure.
Okay.
So range of motion. Yeah. So
I'm gonna try to get like the swelling down.
Yeah, it just
try
feels
to be
good
nice to the muscles before I torture them.
Again, a lot of people think like, oh, well, you just need to completely like push on them and just crank on them. But at the same time, like, I don't think people realize like how much scar tissue sometimes build up in those area. And if you don't loosen it up a little bit, if you're not working on scar tissue mobility, like definitely after their incisions healed too, like some of the times that's what's limiting them from going farther.
It's all matured and it's getting...
So like I start a lot of it early on. Pretty much as soon as I know that incision has healed, I'll start working on scar mobility.
Yeah, a lot of it can be prevented through like just passive range of motion or soft tissue, but really trying to get in there.
Build up more too in general.
Yeah, that's
sensitivity
true.
Too decreases the sensitivity. Oh, yeah, some people are really weird and they won't want to touch it, and they can build up sensitivity to it.
It's just funny. Like they're just weird.
Sorry, I have no problem touching weird. Like anyways. In all fairness, I guess.
I mean, some people just think it's sensitive. It's just weird.
I'm like, I can't touch one area of my incision right now because it's sensitive.
Just one spot.
Just in one area.
Actually, right. I've seen it a couple times. They're like, oh yeah, this part, that's fine. But if you get there, it's like, okay, that part's
kind of sends me through a roof. It's not pain. Mm. It's like the weirdest sensation in the world.
Yeah,
but and you have to be careful too because you don't want to rub too early. I had orthoscopic knee surgery and therapist came in and she started doing scar tissue mobility on my incision and she did it too early and she reopened it.
She do it?
What do you mean?
Did it manually with just her fingers?
Manual, yeah, just manual.
So I've seen it with a snake bite kit.
Huh?
So like so you know like cupping, right?
Yeah.
So it's like cupping, but it's like it looks like a syringe. And I mean, the purpose of it is if let's say you got bit by a snake and you suck the venom out.
That's brilliant.
You put the syringe and then you pull up, right? Mm-hmm. So if you just grab this, you just don't put the attachments on it. You just have like the syringe, but it's like a little more open.
It just gets into those little narrow spots where you can't get.
Yeah. So you just put it right where you want it. You pull the syringe up so the skin comes up.
Mm-hmm.
I just hit my mic, my bad. So the skin comes up and then you just kind of like, you know, twist it, pull up, pull down. So it's like a way to do a scar mob.
Yeah.
But like maybe get a little deeper in the patient doesn't like it, but it's a good way to prevent the scar.
In one of my clinical rotations, they would do cupping, but they would do it with lotion. Mm-hmm. So you put the lotion down. And then you suction up and then you move the cup around and it just pulls everything up and does some like releases and helps break up that scar tissue. It's a great way to save your hands too.
No, I agree.
There
are people that are against it just because it's, I don't know.
But I feel like that's one of those ones where you can start off like light though too. You don't have to go in hard. Like we had a patient who, during my clinical rotation, her biggest complaint after her total hip, she did home health first. And then she came to outpatient.
Okay.
So I think she did like a month and a half of home health. So she was moving pretty good. We were past the early stages. Incision was completely closed. But her biggest complaint was she goes, I feel like I'm sitting and sleeping on a brick. Because she had just built up so much scar tissue.
It was just like really dense.
It was really dense. The muscle around it was just super tight. Like, so we did a lot of the cupping technique, and afterwards she goes, after I want to say a week and a half, so three times a week, so like her fourth or fifth visit, she was like, I finally feel like I can sleep without a brick. Yeah. And so like little things like that, sometimes we get so focused on the motion, and sometimes I think things like that get like put to the side.
I just think it's like a nice variety. Like, and that's the thing. Like, some you don't know what patients are going to respond well to. Like, if you're comfortable with the patient, experiment a little bit. If they're comfortable with you, and they, you know, they're confident in what you're doing. Like, oh, let's
read on them.
Let's try this. Let's try that. Like, let's find out what works best for them. One, it's a good way for you to find out like new techniques, what good feedback from the patient. Like, oh, I liked it when you did this. So when you see another patient for like the cupping, for example, it's like, oh, I've had a patient that was really tight. Like, you want to try cupping? Let's see how it goes. And if it works well, great. If it doesn't, then, well, you want to talk about some expectations for totals?
Like, outcomes should be pretty good, I guess. Expectations, you can realistically tell them, like, you should be able to get back to all previous activity and more. Again, depending on what else is going on.
True, there's always a lot.
Yeah, I think you have to take it patient by patient.
For knees, because you talk about like the functional for the knee flexion, knee extension. Knee flexion, I believe, is 90 degrees. That's when you get to muscle, like muscle length testing and things like that. You want more than 90 just to be able to perform, but like 90 is where you can be able to sit in a chair. 90, I guess, is just a muscle length test. I think it's the Elies. You lay prone and you just bend the knee.
Yeah.
It's your negative or positive or tight quads, depending on all that. But you'll still see restrictions and flexion, and some definitely important. But like extension, I feel more patients definitely struggle with.
Yeah.
But I have had patients where their extension was great and they struggle with flexion. So it's not like you always see one more than the other. But
no, on average, though, you'll see extension's like the harder one.
I think extension's definitely the harder one. And it's so important, too. Because imagine trying to stand where you can't straighten your leg and you have that constant knee bend.
Well,
and it's just messing up all your mechanics. It's one hip's lower than the other.
It's not even that, too. You have your locking mechanism.
Yeah, like if it can't extend all the way, then you don't have your locking mechanism.
Exactly.
Okay, I thought you meant you did have it.
No. I meant like you have your locking mechanism with extension. So like if you don't have your full extension, you're missing that terminal knee extension, which is that locking mechanism for your knee not just to go boom.
I agree. Okay, what's about shoulder expectations for that?
Shoulder's a little tougher. I haven't had too many. What I've seen, pretty good outcomes. It all just depends on the person
and the approach
and
but they don't get, from what I've seen, they don't get their full range of motion back, at least with the reverse.
I would say they're definitely more limited in external rotation afterwards.
I think the hard part about shoulders too is it's not a common weight bearing joint.
I think it's harder to get back because of the fact that you're not forced to use it too. Where your legs, you're forced to use the same in your hips. Different. Yeah, pretty much.
Like your knee and your hip, like you need that. You need a walker.
Yeah.
But your shoulder, it's like if you really want to baby it, you can just not use your shoulder at all. But so, the range of motion's like, I mean, more than half, I think, but it's definitely not full, depending on which approach they took.
I think it just also depends on the person, too.
No, but even if it's a reverse, you think they can get full range of motion back?
No, sorry.
Like, it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on the person and the approach.
Yeah.
But I just go as...
Well, you think if you do a reverse, your mechanics is just completely different. It's literally reversed. Mm-hmm.
It's not the same. The ball and socket is now a socket and ball.
It is. It changes. So, and that changes things. But ultimately, they should be completely...
Like functional.
They should be complete functional.
Yeah, at that point, you're just aiming for functional.
Mm-hmm.
Can they do their activities?
Functional without pain is a normal expectation for those.
Yeah, the range might not be the same as their non-surgical side, but can they do their activities? Can they get through their ADLs and all the fun stuff?
Yeah.
All right. What about hips?
Hips, pretty good. Like we said earlier, best outcomes usually. They're going to recover the fastest. You will have, do not let your total knees compare themselves to total hips. Remind them they're completely different surgeries.
And it goes back to the person. You can even do like, not even the person, who performed the surgery.
Yeah.
Like some people like the same person to perform the surgery. You can have, there's just so many factors.
So many
factors. But don't compare knees to shoulders to hips. Like
they're all different.
The mechanics are different. What they do is different.
How they weigh
degrees of freedom, range of motion.
it's just all different. Like just everything. But
the outcome's pretty good.
They're pretty good.
Pretty fast. After a while, you just focus on strengthening. Mm-hmm. Ask them what they do. Do they go upstairs? Do they not use stairs? Do getting out of a car, walking for a long time, standing for a long time?
I would say like hips really sometimes, like the beginning is just pain control. And because you do light range of motion, but even then, like you're so limited still.
Yeah, because you still have precautions. And
mm-hmm, depending on the ones, like, so it just all depends. So it's like, I would say for like hips, really pain control and a lot of like, you get a lot of tightness issues because of the fact that they can't go past. So like I used to do a lot of soft tissues on our total hips after like the first 2 weeks. Because most of them would just start to, like, their hip flexors would start to get tight. So, like, you teach them other ways to stretch kind of some of those hip flexors without pushing themselves into, like, extension if they can't.
Into the motions they can't go into.
Yeah, it's like you have to find, like, different ways to do things where they could get some relief. But, like, I would do, like, a lot of, like, soft tissue work on trying to keep those kind of looser.
And then my personal study tip that I've kind of thought about when it comes to knowing your precautions is just not to like, if it's a posterior approach, you just don't want to stretch the scar. Mm-hmm. So you can't do flexion past 90 for a posterior approach. You can't do external rotation for an anterior approach. Like things that would stretch that area is a good baseline to go off of. It's just the less you can memorize, the better. If you can make it sense.
Yeah.
Then school gets a lot easier and the field gets a lot easier and your job gets easier.
Yeah.
So make it make sense.
Sometimes I overthink it. That's like, I will say that's my biggest problem. Sometimes I like way overthink things and they're like, you're overthinking this. And I'm like, well,
sometimes it's hard not to. I don't blame you.
I'm like, but like, if we keep going down this rabbit hole, like doesn't this, this and that. And like, they're like, just stop.
And then the biggest thing, one of the biggest things is definitely knowing your precautions. Because even in some practicals that I've had, if you don't know your, if you miss over like a certain precaution, you automatically fail.
Yeah, it's a safety.
They're that important. It's regardless of the studies and all that we talked about, they're still important. Mm-hmm. And we still should know them. And we're still going to follow them. I don't know if the day's going to come where it's like, oh, you don't got to worry about it anymore.
I don't think
regardless what the like studies say, you're still going to follow them.
Yeah, it's all going to come down to the doctor, too. Like, they could wipe universal precautions, but if the doctor still wants them, then the doctor gets them.
True.
But the one thing we did not touch on that you usually do with a lot of totals is wound care, actually. You're watching out for wound care, at least.
True. Like, your signs of
infection. So,
so
you've got redness, warmth.
Red.
Swelling.
Swelling.
Well, excessive swelling, I should say. Smell. There's a smell coming from it. And
those are big, too.
Pus.
Just the way it looks. Signs of infection are really big.
Drainage. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. Because if they're draining in it for too long or something like that, or if you see some green in it.
And it's definitely, even like the, like you said, the swelling, the redness, a lot of it's like excessive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, this is warm to the touch.
Like their knees going to be warm. But if you just put them on a hot pack. Or right after they do an exercise for the first time.
Yeah, it might be a little hot, but.
They're going to be a little hot, but
excessive. You can check with them too. Be like, hey, like, have you been feeling okay? You've been doing okay? Like you don't have fevers or anything? Like,
do not be scared to go get a second opinion. I've literally gone in and been like, hey, can you look at this? I'm questioning whether or not it's an infection. And my PTs literally come in and go, no, you're good. Okay, thanks.
That goes for everything.
And then,
whether it's infections, treatment.
And then I've literally had him come in and he's done the same thing. I think you need to go back and let's get you into the doctor. It's iffy.
You had patients come in and completely dehisced.
Oh.
So if you don't know what that is the surgery just reopening. Completely, and then it gets kind of infected. It's pretty gnarly for sure. And after that, it's like wound care daily, going back to the doc's office. You need to clean that out because now they can't.
You're on antibiotics. You usually will have wound care. Different variables that could come into play, but you definitely like you need to be aware of that. You need to be aware of their staples. Like, you're going to get limited also by until their staples come out too.
True.
Like,
don't push them with these. I got their staples, stitches.
And I will tell you, when I was in physical therapy, when I was in high school for my first knee surgery, I was at a clinic where the lady pushed herself into too much flexion and she popped her staples out. No joke. And you want to talk about it? Like, I can hear the scream. Like, it's a scream I will never forget. Like, ouch. Bloody murder scream. Like, that's what it sounded like.
They probably didn't come back.
Like, don't, again, if they start to feel like it starts to hurt too much, don't try to push it, because, like, that's the worst thing you could do pretty much with the total knees pop staples.
I think that's something you'll just learn.
But with time, you'll know. Like,
how aggressive to be.
Yeah.
Some patients do want you to be more aggressive, but you can't.
Some patients
don't want you to be aggressive, but you need to be. Mm-hmm. Like, those are things that you're going to have to figure out as you go, patient by patient, case by case.
A lot of hold, contract. So is it hold, relax, or contract, relax? Because I've heard those interchange so many times.
And it's funny you mention that, because when I was in school, it was so back and forth.
Right?
To the point where, like, they had to, like, think about it for, like, the practicals, because one person would say one thing, another person would say another. So the way I think about it, which even I don't know if I'm right, because it's gone so back and forth, and anybody listening, if you have your way, please let us know. But for me personally, contract, relax is, let's do the hamstring, because it's pretty easy for us. Mm-hmm. So patient's laying on their back, I'm on the table doing a hamstring stretch. Contract, relax, I am letting them win. So I'm going to be like, okay, I want you to bring your heel back towards the table. So they're going back into that extension, right? And I'm letting them win little by little, going back towards the table. Then I tell them to relax, and I go all the way back up into a stretch.
Okay.
And then hold relax is same scenario. I'm going the hamstring stretch. I tell them to contract, but the leg is not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the hamstring fatigues out. I tell them to relax. And then I go into a new end range. So it's just a matter of, is their leg moving or not?
Yeah.
Because then you also have, like, reciprocal inhibition. It's just...
it's a hot mess. I've literally heard it both ways.
What I love about PNF techniques is super beneficial. And I definitely think it's a skill that we can provide that not anybody can just do.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you have to pick which patients to do it with, because if I'm doing the hamstring stretch, I'm saying, I need you to try to push against me at 10%, because I'm fully lengthening the leg. I don't want them to do a full contraction. One, I don't want to fall off the table. Two, I don't want them to hurt themselves. So if the patient can't follow directions appropriately, they're not a patient that you're going to do PNF patterns or PNF stretching with.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that, definitely.
But if you guys have any thoughts on this hold, relax, contract, relax, PNF
debacle. I've literally had...
I know, me too.
Someone's like, we're going to do contract, relax, okay? Hold, relax. I'm freaking... which one's which?
It goes so
That's why I literally am like, I just... so...
everyone has their own little tidbits to throw in. And that's why... and also why we want to build that community, because... you can post on IG or Facebook and just throw in your thoughts of these same topics that we're talking about. And you might mention something that someone else hasn't tried and they'd love to give it a try. Or maybe they're going through school and be like, oh yeah, I use so-and-so to help me study. And they're like, cool, they can use that to study. Because I mean, you can also Google it too. And that's what we did a lot of the time. It's just like, oh, let's just Google acronyms or the mnemonics for this and that.
Yeah.
But if it's just in one place, and you can straight up just ask this community, hey, what did you guys do for this? Or maybe you guys can post mock patients and be like, hey, this is my patient. What would you guys do?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, I think, would be really good for the community in general, for sure. Because, I mean, we're all still learning. It's always a learning process. None of us know everything. I'm sure we've already mentioned some things that are completely wrong in our podcasts. And feel free to correct us, because we know we don't know everything. We're still fairly early in our careers at this point.
Yeah.
So if you guys have any thoughts, any opinions, or corrections, post them, let us know, and we can address them.
And like, be kind to as you post. Like, this is supposed to be a space for safeness too, of like learning and expanding like our knowledge and helping each other out. So like, when you do post, or if someone posts something different than you don't quite agree with, like, this healthy debate's okay, but that's this fine. Is not, you know, we want to make sure that you felt comfortable with it. Like, there's no wrong answers. This is a place where it's supposed to spark
conversation and debate, and even
not even debate, just thoughts. Like, it really is just supposed to spark, I never thought about doing it that way, or I never thought about that in that way either, too. Yeah.
And I feel like that's why it could lead to debate. Like, oh, I think this is better.
Oh, yeah, than that. I think and it could. Like, that's some fine. People think and debate, and they think arguing and debate is different. Yeah.
So. True. Like, there's no need to argue, but healthy debates are always nice.
Yeah.
We just want to understand opposing views. And
yeah, and we just want the community to feel like they have a voice, too. I think sometimes as a PTA, it's hard to feel like you have a voice or an opinion because of the fact that you're not the one technically in charge of care. But you know, we are very knowledgeable. We go to school. We are very hands-on with patients, and so I think this is an area where we can really have those conversations too.
No, I agree,
if that makes sense.
Well, I think that can lead us to our closing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to, so I think at this point we're 4 episodes in at this point.
Yeah, I believe so.
So I just wanted to, one, thank you for listening.
Yes.
And two, just thank everybody else as well. I mean, we're only 4 episodes in, and I feel like we've received quite a bit of support.
Yeah.
And just a lot of people encouraging us to do this, which is amazing, really. We kind of just talked about this one random day. People are like, oh, that's awesome. You guys should do it. And we thought, I mean, at that point, we're just like, oh, yeah, like, it's a nice idea. And
I thought it was going to be like 2 people who listen to our podcast. And
right.
It's going to be like 2 of our friends.
And that's pretty much, and that's fine. I feel like we're doing this just for fun.
Yeah.
Because we love this field. We love working with patients, and mm-hmm. we love just helping anybody out.
Well, I like having this conversation. The
true, because we're still learning things about each other, that even though we worked in the same setting, we still don't know things that we experienced.
Well, and the thing too is like, sometimes you feel like you can't have these conversations where you're at. Or mm-hmm. Because sometimes you do feel like, I can't say that thought because like it's not technically right, or what if I say it's wrong or something like that. So like, that I've enjoyed these conversations just because.
Also, I think it's funny too when like we say a joke that's more physical therapy related, and our friends are like, "You guys are weird." Like, for us, it was kind of funny.
But I have a sweatshirt that's a little ghost, and he's holding a bone, and it says, I think you're humorous. It's got the humorous. I think it's a funny shirt.
See, a lot of people don't even know where your humorous is. Anyways, thank you to everybody for the support.
You.
If you're listening to, like, we definitely appreciate it.
And if you guys would like to hear more or be involved, please let us know too. Email us.
We have a lot of things kind of planned, and we're kind of see where this goes. Like, obviously, we're still learning it, but we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
As far as our social medias.
Do we want to talk? We'll go ahead and tell you what we're going to talk about next week.
Okay.
Just because of the fact that it's not an actual patho, but it's very, I find it very, very important. So we are going to discuss documentation.
And the importance of
documentation.
I don't even like that word.
The importance.
Like, I cringe every time I hear documentation.
Of documentation. But also being efficient at documentation and saying things correctly. And how to work around things. I could go like all day. I will say that's one area I feel like I'm pretty decent at.
I don't like it. I mean, it's got to be done, but I don't like it.
I never say I liked it. I just think I'm decent at it.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on our social medias. We have IG, Twitter. Join our Facebook page.
Instagram.
I said IG.
Oh.
Fine. Join our social medias on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah. Facebook. Invite. Share, guys.
Share. Invite. Get the word out there.
I'll be honest, even if you guys don't listen to it all the way, or you don't listen every single week, just share. You never know who might be.
Who needs it.
Yeah. So let people know.
All right. I'll take care.
All right. Bye, guys. Till next time.